Thanks, Kristen. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
When it comes to foreign policy, most eyes have been on Syria for the past 3 weeks.
But there is another country that many in the national security arena have their minds on, too.
That's Iran. Some even argue that the importance of upholding the red line on chemical weapons in Syria has more to do with maintaining credibility with Iran than it actually has to do with the Syrian civil war. That credibility, they say, might be needed to persuade Iran not to build nuclear weapons.
Middle East expert Kenneth Pollack says that Iran is indeed on the path to obtaining nuclear weapons. And while this isn't ideal, the U.S. should focus more on containing a nuclear Iran than actually preventing it from getting the weapons.
Ken Pollack joins us now. His new book is Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Ken, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So in 2002, your book, The Threatening Storm, you made the argument for military intervention in Iraq to prevent Saddam Hussein getting nuclear weapons. In Unthinkable, you say Iran might get nuclear weapons. You're not making the case that war is the best answer to prevent that. Why? What's different from this about this situation?
Sure. Well, the first point to note is that, of course, I have learned a few things from our experience in 2003 and thereafter. And I try to weave those different lessons all throughout this book. But I think more fundamental, the difference this time as opposed to last time is that when I was looking at Saddam Hussein, and of course I believe the intelligence, like so many other people did, that he had reconstituted his WMD program. And I'll also say that the humanitarian suffering of the Iraqi people also weighed heavily in my thinking. But for me, the most important thing was Saddam himself. Saddam was an incorrigibly reckless aggressor, someone who we had seen behave in suicidally reckless fashion. And that kind of person could not be allowed to have nuclear weapons. And so when our intel community and the intel communities of most of the rest of the world all concluded he was, in fact, rebuilding his nuclear arsenal, would have a bomb within somewhere between 4 and 7 years, my feeling was that is not a situation we can allow to have happen. We need to do anything about it, including an invasion. And one of the points I make on Iran in the book Unthinkable, my new book, is, look, the Iranians are not Saddam Hussein. Yes, they are nasty. They are anti-American. They are anti-Semitic. They are murderous. These are not nice people. They do not mean us well, but they are not suicidally reckless. What we've seen from them over the years is they actually are quite rational, pragmatic, even prudent in their decision making. They push us. They try to figure out where our red line is. They try to come up right to the red line. Occasionally, they get a little bit over it. But what we've seen consistently is when they realize they've crossed a red line, they pull back. And that suggests that containment is a very real alternative to war. And in the case of Iran, what I fear is that if we start down the path of war with Iran, we are going to wind up finding that the only solution to the problem is an all-out invasion along the lines what we did in Iraq. And I don't think anybody is interested in doing that. And I think, again, in the case of Iran, that would be unnecessary.
At the other end of the spectrum, you say there's another wrong answer, and that's negotiation only. Why can't we negotiate Iran out of a nuclear weapons program?
Sure. And let me be very clear about this. I am not opposed to negotiations with Iran. In fact, I am wildly in favor of them. I say over and over and over again in the book that we have to be willing to negotiate with them. Negotiating an end to the settlement with Iran is the right answer. What I argue is not the right answer is giving up the sticks that we've been using. What I argue for is that we have to use both carrots and sticks. And there was an argument a number of years ago that said we should give up all the sticks. We should only use carrots, just give the Iranians positive inducements. And what I do in the book is I trace the history of our interaction with Iran, and I bring in the history of lots of other situations that have been similar to Iran's, both on this and other issues. And on this particular issue, the point that I make is, look, it just doesn't work to try to use only carrots, only positive inducements with a country like Iran. It really has never worked. But what we found is that if you use a combination of the two, you actually can get what you want. My real criticism of the Obama administration, which I think has wielded the sticks extremely skillfully, is I actually think that they haven't been forthcoming enough with the carrots, with the Iranians. The truth is they really haven't put a whole lot lot on the table for the Iranians in terms of things that we could do for them if the Iranians were willing to give up their nuclear weapons programs. And that's where I'd like to see us be a lot more forthcoming. So I believe in carrots and sticks, and I actually think we need to do a lot better on the carrots part, not the sticks part.
We can dig a little deeper into that, the carrot and stick approach in a bit, but let's do a little more scene setting. Where is Iran, as far as we understand from the outside, with the nuclear weapon program?
Sure. And the way that you put that, Rob, is very important, which is we have to remember, and this is one of the lessons of Iraq, our information is always imperfect. Yes, we do have IAEA inspectors, but they don't know everything that's going on. As best we can tell, the Iranians are probably about a year away from having a nuclear weapon from a decision to go after one. And that's an important point, because a lot of people just, you know, they bandy these time frames around, and people assume that, you know, it means a year from this day. So in other words, September 10th, 2014, the Iranians will have a nuclear weapon. That's not what the estimate is. What the estimate says is the Iranians have gone far enough that if their supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, the Ayatollah, said, "I want a nuclear weapon as fast as you can get it for me," they could probably have one in about a year. Now, that's not what they're doing, though. They're not going hell for leather for a nuclear weapon. What they're doing is slowly accumulating stockpiles of both low-enriched and medium-enriched uranium. They are developing the capacity to enrich it faster. And most countries believe they also have a smaller secret program to actually build the physical bomb itself. But that's still a far way away from actually having an arsenal. At best, they've got what's called a breakout capability. But again, as I talk about in the book, there is a world of difference between having a breakout capability and having an actual arsenal. Japan has a breakout capability. No one in the world is afraid of Japan nuking them.
Well, here's a big, even more complicated question. If Iran did get a nuclear arsenal, what would they want to do with it?
Another great question, another question I explore in depth in the book. And, of course, the answer to that is we really don't know. There are lots of different Iranians who have posed very different answers to that question. And what's really unclear is exactly what the supreme leader wants. I think it's pretty clear that he wants to have nuclear energy. There's a matter of prestige for him there, and that's important to the Iranian people. It also does seem like the Iranians would like some kind of a nuclear weapons capacity for defensive reasons. Let's face fact, the Iranians are paranoid. They're not crazy to be paranoid. There are a lot of people out there trying to get them. Of course, most of the people who are trying to get them are doing so because the Iranians threaten them and in some cases attack them. But nevertheless, the Iranians don't see it that way, and they do feel like they're in danger. So there's some defensive element as well. We've heard a number of Iranians, though, espouse more aggressive rationales for having it, basically wanting a nuclear weapon so that they won't have to worry about an American or an Israeli conventional military retaliation if they decide to become much more aggressive in terms of terrorism and subversion and support for insurgencies and things like that. That, of course, is the much more dangerous rationale for Iran acquiring a nuclear weapon. But, you know, even still, that's something we want to guard against. It's a great reason to not want Iran to have a nuclear weapon at all, but in my mind, that's an important kind of boundary to the problem. That's a problem for the region. It doesn't strike me as a big enough problem to justify going to war.
What, given our limited understanding of the leadership of Iran, just briefly, is it just the supreme leader making this decision, or are there other power centers we have to think about? In just a minute, by the way, before we go to our news break.
Sure, absolutely. Iran is a very fragmented place. There are a lot of different people who have a say in policy, and all of them are important. But at the end of the day, it is the supreme leader who calls the shots, and he's going to be the one who makes the final decision.
We're talking to Ken Pollack about his new book, Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy. He's an expert on the Middle East and Persian Gulf, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. You can join in at 800-642-1234, 800-643-1234 if you have a question.
That's 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Veronica Rickert.
I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wait.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Continuing our conversation now with Ken Pollack with the Brookings Institution. His new book is Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy. Ken, we'll get back to Iran in just a moment, but I didn't want to let the time go by without asking you about the news today in Syria. Possibly a diplomatic resolution, maybe out of nowhere. Syria gives up its chemical weapons. What do you think the prospects are there?
Well, on the one hand, I think they're reasonably good because I think that the White House had really gotten themselves into a bind. They had gotten themselves into almost a no-win situation with Syria. And this creates the opportunity for them at least to get out of the short-term situation that they had put themselves in. That said, I worry that they may have gotten themselves out of a box, but maybe they're getting into just another one, maybe a longer-term one. You know, the problem here is that we're going to if this works, we will wind up with a kind of a inspections and disarmament regime for Syria a la Iraq. And obviously, on the one hand, we should remember that that worked. You know, I was at CIA and at the White House during that time period trying to make that all work, and it turned out, although we didn't know at the time, that had worked. Saddam did get rid of his weapons of mass destruction, and that ought to give us some hope that it could work for Syria. The problem is that we need to remember that it took 5, maybe even 6 years, we're really not sure exactly how long, before Saddam was willing to give up his weapons of mass destruction even after the Gulf War. You know, maybe Bashar will be smarter and do so faster. But we should also remember that, you know, it was incredibly difficult to do with Saddam, and that was in a situation where there wasn't a civil war going on. I think it's going to be very difficult to make this kind of a tricky inspection and disarmament regime work in a situation where one of the sides is involved in a horrific civil war, you know, raging all across its country. That just opens up any number of different potential problems out there. So, you know, hopefully maybe a short-term solution, but perhaps not a long-term solution.
And there's an Iranian connection to this story. We heard on Friday intercepted communications saying Iran wanted its assets in Iraq and elsewhere to attack American interests in the event of an American military strike in Syria. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting piece of information. And let's just add a little bit more to it, which is that this apparently was the intercept of a conversation by a man by the name of Qasem Soleimani, who is the head of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Quds Force. That's the part of their Revolutionary Guard that does the terrorism, that helps the insurgents around the world, that does all that kind of nasty stuff. He is the hardest of the hardliners. And so on the one hand, look, this may be absolutely accurate, and it may be that the Iranian government, the Iranian regime, has decided if the U.S. attacks Syria, by God, we're going to make sure that the Americans pay a price for it. The obvious way to do it is to have their proxies in Iraq, and they have a lot of them, go after American assets in Iraq. By the same token, I think there are at least two other explanations out there that are just as valid and really important, both to understand the situation in Syria and to understand Iran more broadly, which is, first, this may be something that the Iranian government leaked deliberately to make sure that the U.S. picked it up, not because they actually planned to do it, but just to deter us from going ahead with the strike because we might fear that these kind of things would happen. And so I think it's actually quite unlikely that the Iranians would retaliate, but they might want to make us think that we are. And then the other possibility is this might be something that Qasem Soleimani and the hardliners are doing on their own to make it very difficult for the Iranian regime to go ahead and open up nuclear negotiations, which, of course, Iran's new president wants very much to do. Somebody like Qasem Soleimani probably opposes that entire initiative, and this may be his way of scuttling any negotiation with the United States. So a very complex government, one that's very difficult to read, but unfortunately it's one that we don't have the luxury to ignore.
Speaking of the new president of Iran, he said earlier today, just saw it before we came on the air today, actually, He said, quote, the period of time for resolving the nuclear issue will not be limitless. The world should take advantage of this period and the opportunity that our nation created in my election. So he says, hey, I've got a little wiggle room after my election. We need to get some nuclear negotiations going now. What do you make of that?
Yeah, again, a very interesting statement by Rouhani. And the way that I read it, and again, one of the things you learn about Iran is we never quite know what the Iranians are thinking. And typically anything they do is open to multiple interpretations. And oftentimes they're valid interpretations. My interpretation of that was Rouhani really would like to see an agreement with the United States. I think he really would like to make some far-reaching changes in Iran. But he's only the president, and I say that semi-ironically. There are other power players in Iran. Obviously, there's the Supreme Leader, there's the Revolutionary Guards, lots of other power centers, many of whom are probably intent on blocking him. And I think what he is signaling is, look, if you want me to actually be able to strike this deal with me, you've got to give me some things to work with, because there are a lot of very powerful forces inside my own country who are lined up against me. And if you guys aren't going to be forthcoming right from the get-go and give me some things to work with to be able to show my regime, the rest of my regime, that, you know, hey, I am making progress, the Americans are taking me seriously, they're making significant concessions to me, I'm going to be dead in the water real fast, and then this is going to go nowhere.
So we're kind of coming full circle to where we started. You said the stick alone, the threat of war, isn't the right answer. The carrot alone, negotiations, isn't the answer. What would the carrot and stick approach look like to trying to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon?
Sure. Well, again, I think that we've done well on the stick, and it's the threat of war. It's also the sanctions, and I think that the sanctions have had a very profound impact. I think that they're an important reason that the Iranians are coming back to the table. I think they're even part of the reason why Rouhani was himself elected. Where we need to do more, as you point out, is on the carrot side. And there, what I'd like to see us doing is putting stuff on the table the Iranians want. So a peaceful nuclear program, peaceful nuclear reactors to generate energy, something that they want. Security guarantees, something that they want. A seat at the Middle Eastern table, be part of the international relations of the Middle East, something that we've consistently denied them. And then the last piece, and in some ways I think the biggest and most important to the Iranians, is economic incentives. You know, so far what the Obama administration has said to them is simply, if you agree to the deal with us on your nuclear program, we'll stop sanctioning you, which really is just saying to them, we're not offering you any carrots, we're just going to stop beating you with the stick. What we need to do is to come forward and say, look, we can go beyond that. If you guys are willing to give up your nuclear program, if you guys are also willing to, by the way, halt your support for terrorism, there's a lot of things that we can do for you. We can give you trade credits. We can give you investment guarantees. We can give you help securing loans from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. There are lots of ways that we can actually not just take the sanctions off, but help stimulate your economy, bring in direct foreign investment, bring in trade, all the things that the Iranian economy desperately needs, and honestly, all the things that the Iranian people most want.
I want to wrap up by asking you a big question about what Iran wants. I see a lot of possible motivations. Is it exporting the revolution, the Islamic revolution of the late 1970s that happened in Iran? Is it being the defender of the Shia faith? Or is it just old-fashioned national interest, trying to be a dominant power in their region? How do all those factor in?
Yeah, again, a great question, Rob. It's actually it's where I start the book, because it is such a foundational question to understand before we start to consider options with the nuclear front. And again, the honest answer is that we don't quite know, and it varies from individual to individual. So for some Iranians, all they really care about is securing their own country and living good lives. For others, they want desperately to advance Khomeini's Islamic Revolution and, expand it to other countries, export it to other countries, as they put it. For other people, it's about Persian nationalism and Iran as a great power. I mean, we should remember Iran was the world's first superpower dating back 2,500 years to Cyrus the Great. And there are many Iranians who to this day believe their country by nature ought to be the most important country in the Middle East and Southwest Asia. And for them, nuclear weapons are a key to that. Still others are very frightened of the United States. And this is part of the problem of Iran, is that they have lots of different motivations. And part of what we're going to have to do as we enter into these negotiations with them is to help them to have a constructive conversation about, all right, at the end of the day, what is it that we really want, and therefore what can we accept? Because the U.S. hasn't really put a deal on the table that was appealing to the Iranians, we've never forced them to confront that question and sort out from themselves what is it that they really want.
Ken, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Ken Pollack with the Brookings Institution. We've been talking about his new book, Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy.
Now we'll check the headlines, and then we'll be back with an update on Apple's release of its new iPhone. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.